Have we ever stopped to consider how many things that we learn or how many things that we've been taught before we leave this life? If we were to give consideration to that, I suspect that there are hundreds, if not thousands, of things that we are taught to do in an average lifetime. Of course, some tasks are almost instant, like tying the shoes. You do that once or twice, and then that's pretty much the end of it. Other tasks may take a long time to learn or learn to do well. But in some respects, we as people, as human beings, never stop learning. Last Sunday night, if you were here, we examined a key word that's used in the New Testament that is translated teach. It is the most common word. It is didasko, D-I-D-A-S-K-O. It's so common that we were able to limit our study to the books of Matthew and Mark. Tonight, I want to begin with the book of Luke and go through the rest of the New Testament, and we're just only going to pick out really a handful of references, but these are what I think, at least in my mind, are some of the key additional places in the New Testament where this term is used. I'll only read about two passages. The first one is not going to be read, but I will obviously reference it. It's Luke chapter 11, verse 1. Here is a place where one of the disciples came to Jesus and said, "We want you to teach us." Teach, there's our word. "We want you to teach us how to pray." In earlier lessons, we've noted sometimes that people have a very narrow, sometimes they have a very restricted view of what teaching is. We sometimes meet people, or maybe we ourselves, think of teaching as being in a literal classroom with a group of students, and if that's not the arrangement that we have, then we're not teaching, and that's simply not true. As we have tried to establish from the New Testament in a series of lessons, teaching involves several different things. There may be a number of different ways in which we teach. It is impossible, if we believe the Bible, to say that we teach in one and only one way. Luke, in Luke 11, verse 1, gives us a small but important point about teaching. People can be taught about various things, including worship. Things like prayer can not only be taught, but it is important to teach these kinds of things. The local congregation that we're with, in this case Goshen, one day it may be another congregation. That congregation, just as here, will probably have people who help on a various in various ways on a regular basis. There are song leaders. There are people who help with the communion. There are people who help with the contribution, and certainly people who help pray. But you know, as you look at the people here, and as we look at people in other congregations, the people who carry out those tasks, they did not wake up one day and say, "Aha, you know, I finally know how to pray in public," or "I finally know how to pass the Lord's Supper," or "I finally know how to deal with the contribution." Those skills, those abilities are learned talents. They do not automatically come with age. It's not that we reach the age of 21 or 30 or 40, whatever it is, and then all of a sudden we have that information and those abilities. It is largely an unseen work, and it is certainly not all that complicated, but we have people who prepare the elements for the Lord's Supper time after time after time. The elements for the supper do not magically appear down there on the table week after week. People have been instructed, they've been trained in that important task, and they do it on a regular basis. I've said a few times over the years here that my family was not religious as I was growing up, but we did attend a well-known denomination at various times, from time to time, occasionally. And even though we were not really involved with that religious group, I remember a time when I was about 14 or 15 where that denomination said that they wanted my family to pass the Lord's Supper. My sister and I, Mom and Dad, were all supposed to go ahead and distribute the communion. We did not need to prepare it, we just needed to pass it. My family was selected for that month to serve. Now, within the church, we probably would look at that particular activity and think, well, you know, passing the communion is not that big of a deal. But I can tell you, as I thought back to that particular time in my life, from a young person's perspective, who had almost no exposure to religion, that was a frightening thing at the age of 14 or 15. There was no training. There was no preparation. It's just, we have to pass this stuff out to the folks who are going to come, and we want your family to get to it. Now, I remember how I felt during that particular time, and I suspect that there are others who either have that feeling or would have that feeling where they put in that same kind of environment. So there is a need, there is a great need for people to be taught so that they can carry out some of the basic things in worship as well as other parts of the Christian life. The way that we teach people may vary. Some of the teaching may be done by a blood relative. It may be that a father tries to prepare his son for a time when he's going to lead a public prayer or help with the communion, the contribution, or do all these other things. It may be some other relative. It may be instruction that's given in a Bible class. It may be guidance that's offered by a preacher, instruction that's offered by an elder, help that comes from a deacon, Or it may come from a man, older Christian gentleman, a member of the church who's been doing this for a long time. Tries to take a young person and say, there are some things that I've learned. You know, it was difficult for me. You're coming up, you're at the age of 11, 12, 15, whatever it is, and this is something that we hope that you one day will do, and let me share some of the things that happened in my early life, good and bad. The teaching that we see in Luke 11, verse 1 is something that still needs to be done. Another reason for doing that is a time eventually comes when people usually can no longer do what they once did. Every moment of every day, all people age. Eventually, the time arrives when many must stop doing what they were able to do for a number of years. Rather, to continue to help with worship, a lot of men find that a time later in life, they must sit down, and that's the way in which they can participate. They can no longer come to the stage area, no longer get up and help serve and do some other things that perhaps they once did. That is a natural part of life. Because of that, a new generation always needs to be trained. It needs to be ready to rise up and continue the work. And we want to help prepare that new generation for their work in the church. People will not be ready to pray or do much else unless they've been taught. The word for teaching is used, obviously, at other times in the book of Luke. But as I said, we want to kind of highlight some of the key references tonight. So we're moving past Luke and into the book of Acts. Acts chapter 5, and I'm going to read this particular passage. The specific verse is 28. As you look in the early chapters of Acts, you find that the first Christians were trying to teach the unsaved about the gospel, but they found that there were some officials who were not enthused about their work. Christians quickly realized that there were Jews who wanted to keep the religion of Judaism. They saw Christianity as a threat. And because Christianity was regarded as a threat, we find that God's people were sometimes persecuted. Again, Acts 5, verse 28, saying, "We strictly charge you not to teach," there's a word, "in this name. And behold, ye have filled Jerusalem with your teaching and intend to bring this man's blood upon us." Some of the first century Christians faced intense persecution for clinging to Christ and trying to teach about the Lord. At the present time, that is not our situation in the United States. We worship in the open. Tonight, as we are here, there's nobody that's trying to beat down the doors and, you know, haul us off to jail. We are unmolested. We're not bothered. But that may not always be the case. We may see in this particular country, perhaps within our lifetime, that a day will come when we are no longer allowed to do what we are doing this evening. In some respects, a few of America's liberties have already been curtailed and restricted. We certainly live in a time when secular society calls for tolerance and acceptance on various moral issues that the Bible condemns. And when we deal with those particular issues, society is not pleased. Some of you may have seen the BNP devotional this past week on the latest issue of Newsweek. Now, I've not had a chance to go through that particular magazine yet, but from the things that I've read about it, and there have been a number of quotes and a number of sources, it has information that is designed to say, well, homosexuality is something that can be justified by the Bible. One of the key arguments that's being advanced in that particular publication is that Jesus would, if he were alive today and on the earth, would reach out to homosexuals. And because that's how the Lord would respond, that's how we need to live as well. Well, the magazine got half the story right. Jesus would indeed reach out to all people. We want to reach out to all people. But there's a difference between reaching out to people and saying, stay where you are, and a difference in reaching out to people and saying, you need to repent. If Jesus were here on the earth today, he would not say, well, stay as you are. He would preach the same gospel that he did more than 2,000 years ago, Luke 13:3. I tell you, nay, but except ye repent, ye shall all in like manner perish. Now, people in the world sometimes think that part of the Bible's teaching or instruction is harsh and unloving. Secularists often like to stand ready to oppose those who stand up for the truth. When we think about Christianity and trying to teach people, whether that's in a classroom situation or the person at school, at work, the neighbor, whoever that is, Acts 5 has a very important lesson for us. We want to teach even when society says, do not teach. We want to speak, even when society says, do not speak, be quiet. A faithful Christian will refuse to keep silent even when he knows that there are people who will not approve. Now, we want to be wise in what we say, how we say things, and when we say things. Jesus and the apostles, as we look at their lives, we find that they certainly used wisdom when it came to speech. If enemies are simply looking for ammunition to attack us, Jesus did not provide that kind of thing to people. The apostles certainly didn't, and we're under no obligation to give people that. But Christians want to be people who stand up for the truth. They speak out for what's right. We try to teach people even when they do not want to be taught. That's part of the example in Acts 5. Now, sometime this activity may come with a price. perhaps a high price. But the people who truly and those who truly love and honor God will do that. As we teach, we want to be people who are consistent with our instruction. One of the things that will destroy teachers' credibility is inconsistency, and there are several ways to be inconsistent. As I think about consistency, I'm reminded of how this word is used in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17. Paul said he taught. But not only did he teach, but he said, I teach the same thing in every church. That is, Paul did not have one message for the Corinthians, another message for the Thessalonians, another message for the people of Thessalonica, and another message for the Philippians. When he preached the gospel, it was the same gospel each and every time. Some do not really know what they believe, so their teaching is incoherent, and inconsistent. But when we have the truth, if we've decided that we're going to teach the Word of God, nothing more and nothing less, we will have a clear message, and we will have a consistent message. We'll always be consistent if we use the Bible and nothing else, because we've not founded our teaching, our instruction, and opinion, but on the right foundation, God and His Word. Furthermore, when we teach, what we say is going to be right for every group of people. We're not going to say, well, this is for this particular group, and this is for this particular group. It will all be the same. True preaching, gospel teaching demands that we use the one standard, so things are always consistent. Next on our list, and I'm going to read this passage as well, is a text that comes from the book of Colossians. It's Colossians chapter 2. Paul said that the Christians at Colossae had been taught, and he said that the instruction that they had received should have made them people who were grateful, appreciative. In life, we find that there are sometimes people who have some great things, some good things, and they should be grateful for what they have, but for whatever reason, they're simply not very appreciative. If we've been taught the truth, if we know the truth, Colossians 2 verse 7 reminds us that we should be people who are grateful, rooted and built up in Him, and established in your faith, even as ye were taught. And then he says, after you were taught, abounding in or abounding with thanksgiving. If we've been taught the truth, we should be among the most grateful people in the world, no matter what our circumstances are. We are unlike those people who are searching for the truth, thinking the truth may be out there, but you know, we've never found it, we can't find it. We're also unlike those who are blindly following error. We're like the people that Jesus described in John chapter 8. He said, ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. If we've been taught what's right, and we've had a chance to obey what's right, and we have obeyed what's right, we should be very, very grateful. Every single night that we go to sleep, we should be able to lay our head down on the pillow with gratitude and think, I know what's right. It's even better to go to sleep each night thinking, I have done my best to do what I know is right. Truth and our obedience to it should be at the very core of who we are. If we are people who are grateful for the truth, we're going to be folks who try to follow it in every single way. That means that we're going to abide by some of the instructions that we find in places such as 1 Timothy chapter 2. In 1 Timothy 2:12, Paul said that a woman cannot teach or a woman cannot have dominion over a man. Right now, if you follow some of the things that are taking place in the church, this particular passage is receiving a great deal of attention. There are brethren in various places who are affirming that it is wrong for a wife, that is a Christian wife, to teach her husband who is not a Christian. Others are picking up a similar bone of contention and saying that there is never a time when a woman is allowed to teach a man. Well, these conclusions are not well thought out, and they're certainly not correct. We can prove that point quickly and easily. For instance, in Colossians chapter 3, verse 16, Paul talks about singing, and he says that when we sing, we teach. The word that's translated teach in Colossians 3:16 is the very same word that's used in 1 Timothy 2:12, where Paul says a woman is not allowed to teach a man. In Colossians 3:16, Paul says, when we sing, we teach. Well, now, if women are singing in the assembly, then they're teaching. There is no other conclusion. So when Paul says women are not allowed to teach, 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12, he cannot mean that that applies to every possible or every conceivable situation. If it did, then women would not be allowed to sing, Colossians 3:16, because in that singing they do teach. There is some type of limitation on what Paul said in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 12. Here's something else to consider. Suppose that a local congregation has in one of its Sunday bulletins an article that describes how a person can become a Christian. And there is at the door a female greeter, and she's handing out the bulletins containing this particular article to a visitor. The non-Christian man reads the article, and because of what he reads, because of what this lady has handed him, he obeys the gospel. Well, in this particular situation, we would have to agree that a woman is partly responsible for teaching a man. Now, it's true that she did not write the article, but she did hand the Bolton to the man, and by that particular action, he would not have had the article otherwise, by that particular action, she did teach the man. So was it wrong for the woman to pass out the church bulletin? Or we might revise the point just a little bit. Let's suppose that we have a man that's passing out the church bulletin, so the woman is not going to be involved in the process, but we have a female secretary, and she types the bulletin article that is used to convert the man. So she again, in one respect, is still involved in teaching the fellow. Was it wrong to have a female typist? Well, we back it up one step. We say, well, we're not going to let her pass out the bulletin. We're not going to let her type the bulletin. We're simply going to let her publish the bulletin. Well, again, if it's the woman that is pressing the print button on the copy machine, she still has a hand in teaching that particular man. Well, 1 Timothy 2, we're presented with what we might call a mixed assembly. In verse 11 of this chapter, the preceding verse, Paul talks about times where people were learning. And then if we back up a little bit more in verse 8, he talks about this same period, if you will, and refers to people praying. Paul says that in these assemblies, verse 8, that men, and he uses a specific word for males, men were to pray. The teaching in verse 12 has been well defined by Thayer, someone who has defined the words of the New Testament, and his definition of teach in 1 Timothy 2:12 is to deliver a didactic discourse. In modern terms, that would be something like a woman preacher, a woman standing up and delivering a sermon in a mixed assembly such as this. Now, there are some religious groups and congregations of the church who flirted with this idea as well, but there are certainly some religious groups who have lady preachers. And some of those lady preachers are very, very good in the pulpit work that they do. But, you know, being good in the pulpit is not God's criteria for preaching. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, Paul is specific. He says that that's wrong. God's will, God's role, assigned role, is for the male to function in this way. There's to be male leadership in the home. There's also to be male leadership in the church. Women can and women must teach, no doubt about that. But they are not God's choice for preaching and teaching in mixed assemblies. Congregations that do engage in that kind of thing have gone beyond what's written. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 6. We want to be people who do our very best to serve God. And that means, as we look at this particular word that's translated teach throughout the New Testament, we want to seek those times when we can teach. Sometimes it's going to be one-on-one. Sometimes it's going to be teaching a young person. Sometimes it's going to involve teaching someone who's perhaps our age or older. But it is something that we can do, something that we need to try to do throughout our lifetime. And tonight, that's the way that we hope that each one who is here is trying to live. We're trying to teach. So many ways it can be done. And as we tried to emphasize, it does not have to be in a classroom situation. We teach in our singing. We teach by our example. We teach in the things that we say. We teach in so many ways. Tonight, are we someone who's trying to teach others the right way? We hope so. But we cannot do that unless we ourselves have first accepted the teaching that we need to have so we can become a Christian. We trust that every single person who's here that's old enough to be accountable for their actions has become a Christian by God's plan. Faith, repentance, confession, and baptism. If you've not yet taken those steps, you're not in a position to teach others. Tonight, we hope that if you've not yet complied with God's terms for salvation, you'll do that. And if you have, but you've not done well in the area of teaching, that you give consideration to the fact that this is something that you can do in some way. If there's a way that you're subject to the invitation, and tonight we can help you respond, will you let us know as we stand and sing the selected song?
Who at the door is standing, patiently crying, entrance within Emmanuel, whose is the voice I hear? Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. All through the dark hours dreary, knocking again is he. Jesus, art thou not weary, waiting so long for me? Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee. Door of my heart, I hasten, thee will I open. Though he rebuke and chasten, he shall with me abide. Sweetly the tones are falling, open the door for me. If thou wilt heed my calling, I will abide with thee.
Please be seated. If you did not have an opportunity to partake of the Lord's Supper earlier today, you can come to the front and do so at this time.